strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, quick reminder, school's back in session. If you know a Remarkable Valley teacher that deserves $2,500, you can nominate them for our Pay Tribute for a Teacher program that's going on here. Gatos and Chad, do it. Just text TEACHER to 411923. That's TEACHER to 411923. You can nominate a great teacher. The Pay Tribute to a Teacher program presented by your Valley Toyota dealers. Repetitive in topics quite often because the conversation continues to morph, but the storyline stays the same in many cases. Here's another one. I am a big believer that we should, as human beings, but as a city, let's say, or as a community, we should learn from the mistakes of other places, if you can. When someone does something and it works, and you think, let me do that. You know, they talk about parity, and they talk about successful organizations. They talk about how you model yourself after people that have been very successful. If you look at probably one of the most successful business models out there right now, it's the NFL. The NFL's a juggernaut. The NFL draft gets better ratings than some playoff games in other professional sports. Let's be honest. I mean, the NFL is a juggernaut. And the NFL is also a league that it models itself after other things. That, you know, when someone is very successful. When Buddy Ryan had the 46 zone defense with the Chicago Bears and that awesome team they had in 1985 when they went on to win the Super Bowl and you know, all of the Super Bowl shuffle and all that stuff, the defenses around the league began to model that. He has been known because he modeled a defense that they've taken different variations of it. Because when someone is immensely successful, you follow that success. When you look at what happens in college football, Nick Saban and what he does with Alabama and their football program, you take a look at all of the coaches that have gone to have great success. Being mentored by Bill Belichick. So that's, you know, a way to success. But the opposite is also true. When somebody makes a big mistake, you want to learn from that mistake if you can. So I'm setting this up because here's the headline. 10 career criminals. This is 10 criminals have racked up nearly 500 arrests since New York bail reform began. A small group of just 10 career criminals was allowed to run amok across the Big Apple and racked up nearly 500 arrests after New York enacted its controversial bail reform law. Most of them are still on the street. What do we do? Phoenix is going through some changes. The Valley is as well. I mean, there's shortages of police officers across the Valley, immense growth across the Valley. Trying to keep up with growth is a difficult thing when it comes to policing. We know crime is on the rise. But Phoenix is in a unique situation, trying to retain qualified officers, trying to attract new officers while they go through a transition in police chief. All of that is happening. And they are in a unique situation right now, but we also have a unique situation when there's going to be leadership change at the county attorney's office. Now, there's prosecutors in the city of Phoenix as well, but the county attorney's office that deals with crime across the valley. So we elect our county attorney, and we have to take a very good look at who we are going to elect to that post. Because if you're going to elect somebody that's going to make it a political operation and it's going to be, and I'm not telling anybody how to vote, but if they are going to be easy on crime, if they're going to try to do these different kinds of woke things with crime, it's not working. There are a lot of people in a lot of cities across this country that believe that have a mentality that is a lot more progressive, certainly a lot more progressive politically than mine. I am also someone that believes in redemption. I'm someone that believes in rehabilitation. I believe in all of that. But there's got to be punishment when you make a mistake, when you do something bad. And if you're a repeat offender, and I think we do this, parents do it with their children. You punish a child for bad behavior. If the child does it again and they didn't learn their lesson the first time, you up the punishment. And as they get older and they should know better, you up the punishment when they get older. And some children learn quickly and some children don't. But if we don't take a look at what works and what doesn't work, and we don't start following the models of what works and ignoring the models and staying as far away from the models that don't work, we are going to be, as a society, in very big trouble. And we continue to talk about this topic, but you've got 10 people, just 10, that have been arrested 500 times. So what does that do? Not just to the community, because it is a huge impact on the community. If you're a cop in New York, how much time do you spend arresting these people? How much time do you waste arresting these people? The process, everybody that watches cop shows, and I love them, and I'm not talking about like Live PD or the show Cops or First 48. I'm talking about the Hollywood, you know, the Dirty Harry movies. You know, the Dirty Harry movies are great. They're great fun to watch. Dirty Harry gets in a shooting in every other scene of the movie, and 3 minutes later, after he has just shot people up that were robbing a bank, blew a guy through a window, and someone flipped a car over after they ran over a fire hydrant. 3 minutes later, he's back in the office. He's back on the street shooting somebody else. Every cop I know laughs because the part that police don't tell you is that they spend so much time doing paperwork that they have got to dot every I and cross every T, because when a case goes to court, a defense attorney is going to pick those reports apart. So a large part of what they do is administrative work that is tedious and time consuming, but necessary in order to keep people that are arrested accountable for what they've done wrong. Because if you get it wrong, it gets thrown out of court. You get a reputation as being a cop that doesn't build a good case. Not only that, you've got someone that you know committed a crime that gets off for that crime on a technicality, and it's a technicality you caused. And there's no cop that wants that to happen. But there is an immense amount of paperwork that goes into what they do. There's an immense amount of legwork and time-consuming work to build a case. Then you send it to a prosecutor, or you put someone in handcuffs and run them down and make sure they are put through the system. And they are out on the street laughing at you before you're done doing the paperwork to build the case. What does that do to the morale in the police department? What's it doing to the crime in the city? If we don't learn from these mistakes, we are bound to repeat them. If we don't look at what other cities have done and how adversely it's affected the crime rates in their cities, we are bound to go in that direction. So we have to be diligent and make sure we elect good people. That's the life lesson for all of us. Coming up in a moment, we are going to talk about schools again, but this time a unanimous decision to punish a school board member for something that was said. Yeah, that school board member voted for themselves to get punished. All that's coming up here in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, appreciate you spending some time with the show. Education, a frequent topic on the show because I think it affects all of us. Should more states require high schoolers to take personal finance courses? I would say absolutely. Just a headline, but the fact that we're not doing that anymore is a big question that I have. A Virginia mother blasts son's past suspension for not wearing mask, punished for political reasons. We're moving back to masks. I'm just reading off a couple of headlines. In L.A. County, they are talking about making a rule that says you can't have a homeless, like a tent city, near schools. And other parents are upset that that's happening. And a parents group in Iowa is suing a district for allegedly hiding children's gender transitions. So there's a lot to work with here that we're going to get to. And a school board commissioner that on a job application or answered some questions and admitted that she made some mistakes. I want you to hear this commissioner, this board a member that admits to making mistakes.
While trying to discuss these serious issues, and in doing so, I said things that unintentionally perpetuated harmful stereotypes. I made a mistake, and I'm deeply sorry.
So she voted to admonish herself. It was a unanimous decision. I just want to address a couple of these. And this is my biggest issue with what's going on in public schools is what we're arguing about, but also how we're arguing about it. When you say to someone, I don't want you talking to my child about that issue, you're not saying you dislike transgender kids. None of that's the case. Do I believe that there are families that struggle with this issue? Sure, absolutely. I went to middle school and high school with a guy His name was Jeff. And we rode the same school bus for about 6 years together, middle school and then a couple of years in high school. So probably 5 years together. Lived in the same neighborhood, grew up in the same group of friends, knew him forever. Friends with his sister, and we were watching, tell you how old I am, for those of you who figure this out by the reference, I was watching one day in passing in our house, the Phil Donahue show was on. Phil Donahue, if you remember that guy. And there was a woman on there that was transgender. This was a huge deal that had had a sex change operation, had gone through the entire process. And back then, this was a huge deal. And so I was kind of watching the show, and they start showing yearbook pictures from my high school yearbook. And it was this kid, Jeff, that I grew up with. You know, none of us knew, and it wouldn't have mattered if we did know. But what we taught in schools, it wasn't like they changed the curriculum in school because this kid went through school and wasn't able to tell everybody what he was going through. It isn't about that. It's about, we're especially talking about kindergartners, first graders, second graders, and what they're enduring and what's going on with them. But we're sexualizing kids at a young age. On top of that, we're not doing the core work. I would understand the argument from any educator out there that believes these programs are valuable. If we had children that were reading at or above grade level when they were in third grade, if they were ready for high school math when they were in eighth grade, if we were doing all of the things that we were supposed to be doing, and I'm saying we as a society, if we were educating these kids and preparing them for the future, and you wanted to add these things in, we could argue about their value. But let's start there. We're not. They are not getting the basics in. They are not doing the basics with children. The education system in America is broken, and I think most people agree with that. And so you've got an education system in Arizona that you have one group of people saying is dramatically underfunded. So the first question I have for school districts is, then why are you paying for any curriculum outside of the basics that get them to read at grade level and to perform math skills and science? Why would you buy anything extra? We do this in our own lives with families. If you're a family that isn't making ends meet, you got your own kids, anybody have, you know, you got to help your kids out once in a while. You ever had somebody come to you and ask you to borrow money because they're in a really hard place and you loan them money and then you find out they went out and bought a brand new purse and you say, I thought you were broke. What are you doing? What are you doing? If you can't pay for the basics, then why are you doing anything else? Why don't we have that conversation instead of the validity of whether it's good or bad? But the good and bad of it also is about being age appropriate. We have police departments that take up a lot of their labor force with online predators and with predators in general that are preying on children, that are having sexualized, sexually charged, sexually explicit conversations with children. And in every aspect of our lives, those adults are arrested if they are sexualizing children. In every aspect, except education. You want to talk to a second grader about whether they're transgender or not? Go right ahead. You're a teacher. You're very qualified to do that. You're not a mental health professional. We are trying to take mental health professionals and put them in police departments so that police officers that are not mental health professionals don't have to deal with mentally unstable people that may hurt themselves or hurt other people. You see the disaster that it creates when they're forced to do that. And officers will tell you sometimes they are forced to deal with that. There's no one else available to deal with the issue. But what are we trying to do as a society? Train mental health professionals to intervene instead of it being law enforcement. Not that cops are bad. They're unqualified to deal with some of those situations. So now you're going to take a second grade teacher and you're going to make that teacher a mental health professional in dealing with the sexual identity of a child. Why are we doing it? And not only that, they hide it from parents. Now you've got kids that have, well, for whatever reason, are going through a situation where they've decided that they want to be another gender. They're not telling the parents. You tell me that now. Now explain to me that you don't understand why parents across this country are screaming for other options besides the public school system. And you also try to say you don't understand how the public school system isn't getting kids to read, that it's other people's fault, that it's money's fault, it's everything else. It isn't. We are completely distracted with this agenda. And the reason why I fight it so hard is kids deserve better. This is something we will pay a price for as a society, them specifically, but us as a society in the next 15 years, 10 to 15 years. And it's something that needs to stop. In a moment, we are going to talk about abortion because the White House press secretary said something that I thought was hilariously funny about Roe v. Wade. And I'm going to let you hear her words. And it was countered by something else that was said by the White House. All that's coming up next.
Values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, I appreciate you spending some time on the show this morning. The breaking news, obviously the big story of the day, basketball star Brittany Griner sentenced to 9 years in a Russian prison for having drugs in her bag at an airport in Russia. We all had to figure that something like this was going to happen, that they were going to proceed with the trial, even though they're trying to negotiate for a release of Brittany Griner. What this, I think, does for the Russian government is it gives them now much more of a stronghold. She's been sentenced in a court of law in Russia, whether you think it's a kangaroo court or not. She now has a sentence of 9 years. What would they negotiate to trade for her? And to be very honest with you, she's pled guilty to the crime. I'm not trying to be heartless. I think a 9-year sentence for having a hash pen in your bag is a really heavy sentence. But you broke the law in Russia. How much are we willing to trade away? Are we willing to trade away a known terrorist for this? And what else would Russia want? I understand she's American. And, you know, I keep seeing the things about people saying she didn't want to have the national anthem and everything else played. And in my mind, I think, you know what, a lot of that's true, except as Americans, we should defend ourselves. I talked about the Nancy Pelosi trip to Taiwan. I was questioning why she went to Taiwan. Was it a necessary trip? But in the end, if an American leader, or any American, but if an American leader decides to go to another country, an allied country, and have a conversation, it's none of China's business. And if China wants to say they're going to shoot down the Speaker of the House's plane, I don't care if it's Newt Gingrich or if it's Nancy Pelosi. And anybody that listens to my show for longer than 3 minutes knows that there's nothing about Nancy Pelosi that I like in her politics. Nothing about the way she does business. Not just what she believes, but how she does business. But she is an elected official. She is the second in line to be president of the United States if the president leaves that office. Behind the vice president is Nancy Pelosi. And as an American, she flies the American flag. She is an American in an American flagged vessel. And anybody that would threaten to shoot that down deserves the full rebuke of the United States and all of us. I would say the same thing if we believe there's some politics involved with Brittany Griner. I don't agree with Brittany Griner's politics either. I thought standing up as a star athlete and saying you don't want the national anthem played before your games was a dumb thing to say, and I don't agree with her at all. At all. But at the same time, she's an American. And maybe this is part of the lesson learned for her, is that even people that disagree with her politically say, as an American, we should stand up for our citizens. But to what degree? She has to take some responsibility here. Whether it was a mistake or she did it on purpose and just got caught and said it was a mistake, she has to take some responsibility for what's happening to her. There's no doubt about that. But as Americans, you know, when you're dealing with a foreign country, if you remember, it doesn't matter when it was George W. Bush, they were doing it in the Middle Eastern countries that we were helping, and they were burning the American president in effigy. I thought that was despicable. You're burning the American flag while you're taking food we are sending you as assistance. I thought that was despicable. But I said the same thing when they were doing it when Barack Obama was president. And again, I didn't agree with anything that Barack Obama did, but he was the elected American president. And we as the American people, the decisions made by our leaders were to help countries with the terrorism threats they had in their countries, with food assistance and with programs to rebuild their countries or build their countries. And we were sending our hard-earned tax dollars there. And as they don't care about our politics, I guarantee you, as much as we don't understand, many Americans don't understand the battle between Sunni and Shia, and we don't understand the religious battle that goes on in those countries when there's the interfighting between people. We just call them all Muslims. We just see them in that we don't know that much about the differences in their faith and why they're at war with each other. They could care less about Republican and Democrat. They see American. They were burning the American president in effigy. I guarantee you people in Russia don't know and don't care that Brittany Griner said what she said about our national anthem. What they do know is that the U.S. is helping Ukraine, and they've got an American star athlete behind bars. Is she partly responsible? Absolutely. But as Americans, we should be standing up for other Americans, because the world doesn't see us as Republican Democrat. We see us as Republican Democrat. They see us as Americans. They love us because of it, or they hate us because of it. And that's the way we should view the, I think, anyway, that's the way I view the world. How are we seen by the world? Because they're not judging you because you're wearing a MAGA hat, and they're not judging you because you're wearing a MoveOn.org t-shirt. They're judging you because you're an American, good or bad. And when it comes to foreign policy, we should see the world that way, at least in my opinion. So I feel bad for Brittany Griner. I think 9 years is a horribly long sentence. But this political mess that's happening now, partly her fault, this political mess is going to be now a one step closer now that the sentencing is done. Now America knows what there is to work with, and Russia's going to get to work. I think some deal will eventually be made. Coming up in a moment, we're going to go back to talking a little bit about the primary elections, a bit of an update where we stand and what happens next. All that's coming up here in just a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. I appreciate you spending some time with me on the show this morning. I'd love for you to help us make a difference in the community. We started something called Broomheads Action Alliance, and all we're doing is community service projects. We will set them up. We will send out an email or a text message letting you know when and where. You can sign up and join us to the ones you want to. You're not committing to do anything but be on the list. If you want to do that, text the word action to 411923, and we will even send you a free t-shirt while supplies last. It's action to 411923. I wouldn't say I lost my temper, but I definitely went over the top with some stuff this morning, because we have had so much attention paid in Arizona since 2020 with the election, and then we had our audit, and then we had that documentary made saying that the election was stolen, and a lot of it was filmed at the audit here in Arizona, and you've got people on my side of the aisle, Republicans versus Republicans, and accusations that some really good people were involved in a huge cover-up and stealing an election and covering up for it and all this other stuff. And it was something that needed to be put to bed and put behind us. And one of the ways you do that is you run an election that is as seamless as possible. You can't have that many people vote, well over a million people vote, and not have some issues. But if you've got major systemic problems, then that is a big issue. It diminishes people's confidence in an election. And so what happened in Pinal County years ago, I talked about this before, many of you remember, Maricopa County had an issue. Maricopa County had a big issue, and it was that we ran a primary and there weren't enough polling places. They miscalculated how many polling places were necessary for people to vote. And it was the only county in the state that made that miscalculation. So it wasn't as if a huge number of people in the state of Arizona voted and surprised half the state. It was one county. And the county recorder in that case, in my estimation, and she's a very nice woman, by the way, the one I'm talking about, and had done a stellar job for decades in that job. And then the spotlight was on her. Now, nobody ever knew before or should know the county recorder's name. No offense, but you should be able to run that office, and the only reason why anybody knows your name is because something bad happened. No one has ever said, man, this was a well-run election. Let's interview the county recorder. It's only when mistakes happen. And she was in the spotlight. And being in the spotlight, she said some things that I would think, I'm pretty sure, she regrets how she said them. No doubt about it. Well, Pinal County spoke yesterday about the issues they had in their election and what was going on and why it was happening. I want you to hear, this is the county attorney, Ken Volkmer. And this was just part of what the issue was.
What we were doing is we were able to use two machines to print ballots. So we were able to print ballots, but quite frankly, our machines were antiquated. Because of the complexity of the ballot, we were able to print essentially one ballot every 3 minutes per machine. We only had two machines, meaning we were only able to print approximately 40 ballots per hour.
40 ballots an hour? What kind of a printer did you use? Was it the one they printed the Bible with right after the Revolutionary War? Was it a hand crank printer? It's like you're kicking somebody when they're down. But the implications here, you look online, you know, I do say, and I have to admit, Twitter is not a real place. So you're right. It isn't a real place. But what's happening on social media right now is people are talking about intentional errors. People are talking about intentionally doing things wrong. Now, I don't believe this was intentional. I don't believe this was intentional at all. And so what happened was big mistakes. The problem I have with big mistakes is they made big mistakes a month or so ago when they printed out their early ballots. And the early ballots went out, and the early ballots were wrong. And then they had to come up with orange-lined ballots in order to fix that mistake. Now things are much different. I want you to hear, this is him talking about this not being sinister, but does this sound like excuse-making, or does this sound like, I'm just trying to tell you, nothing sinister happened here?
We're all human. But for the grace of God, there go I. We've all screwed up. There is nothing sinister. It wasn't as if we said, hey, this is only going to impact a Republican, or this is only going to impact a Democrat. This was widespread. It was equal opportunity. It was just simply a mistake.
Okay, I get the intent. But when you say, hey, listen, there but for the grace of God. No, that's... There is no reason to say that to voters in your county who waited hours to vote. And I don't know how many people couldn't vote, but you know there were people that ran out of time. You know that there were people that went back, still didn't have ballots, and ended up running out of time and not voting. I don't know how many people that impacted in Pinal County, and I don't think they know either. But if you're a voter in Pinal County and you went to vote and they said, we don't have ballots, and then you find out a couple of days later in the 21st century, we only had a machine that would print 40 ballots per hour. Now, I will tell you, in Maricopa County, where I went to vote, I went to the Greek Orthodox Church on about 20th Street in Maryland. And that was my polling location. I walked in, had my voter ID card, showed them a picture ID, scanned my voter ID card, verified who I was, walked over to a table that was maybe 8 feet away. From the time it took me to walk from where I checked in the kiosk to where I picked up my ballot, which was less than 10 feet away, my ballot was printed. They printed it on the spot. You mean to tell me that there is that dramatic of a technological difference in the kind of machinery they have in Maricopa County and Pinal County? So then maybe this is deeper than the guy they hired to run the elections. Maybe this is a complete neglect of their election system in Pinal County. But the problem is, it makes the entire state of Arizona look bad. We all look inept. And what it does is it takes the people that believe that the elections are being stolen and rigged, and it inflames that discussion at a time when that's the last thing we need. That's why I keep harping on this. I think it's terrible. Coming up after 10 o'clock, we are going to speak with someone about the new act and what it's going to do to businesses if we end up doing this thing all over again and this Build Back Better Act.